This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Shlishi, Simen Yudzai. Now we discussed in Simon Tes Zayin, the Kuzari said that when a person is lacking his intellectual faculties, his ability to enjoy pleasure is impaired as well. And he gave the example of the drunkard who's given all the pleasures of the good food and the good women and everything that he could possibly have wished for, and when he wakes up from his drunkenness, he expresses disappointment at the fact that it was all wasted on a situation which he couldn't enjoy. And the Chovah, the Mechaber, now goes on to explain why that is, why pleasure and intellect are so closely interwoven, and why the human being is capable of more pleasure than the animal. That really is the principle of it. If pleasure was an animal principle, then animals should have more pleasure than human beings. But since human beings are capable of greater levels of pleasure than animals are, we see that there's something uniquely human about the ability to enjoy, about the ability to have pleasure. And this piece of Kuzari explains how to use the human faculty in order to enjoy things, to have pleasure. Omar Echover, ha-hizdamnus lahano v'hargoshoso. The preparedness for pleasure and the feeling of it, the sensing of it, lies in that the pleasure is doubled by imagining the absence of the pleasure before experiencing the pleasure. So here the human being is using his imaginative powers to actually project a situation in his mind and in his imagination where he pictures himself in the situation without the particular pleasure he's about to have. And that is one of the purposes of brochus for a person who says them regularly with kavona and hachona. A brocha needs, as a chidush here, that a brocha needs hachona. One has to prepare oneself for a brocha. The brocha itself is a preparation for the pleasure. But the brocha, in order to do it properly, the brocha itself needs preparation. So you need preparation for the brocha, and then you need the brocha, and then the pleasure. And if you do it that way, then one can use the brocha to increase the pleasure. Mipnei sheheim metzayirois min ha'ano benefesh, because they describe and picture, the brocha causes the pleasure to be pictured, painted in the mind, and the praise for he who gave it to us. Now, praising somebody for giving you something already implies the fact that without him you would have been without it. That's why thanks is so important. To say thank you to somebody, you're acknowledging that without you I wouldn't have it. That's what saying thank you means. So saying thank you is not just important al derech eretz. Saying thank you is important in order to appreciate that which you've got and to appreciate the source from which it came. Uchvar hoyo mezuman leheedero. And that brings about an appreciation of the fact that one could well have found oneself without this pleasure that one is about to have. Va'az tigod el hasimcha bo. And then the joy of that particular activity becomes far greater. For example, take a simple brocha, Shechiyonu v'kiyamonu. That means before we say that brocha of Shechiyonu v'kiyamonu, a brocha which by the way, the Tzadik HaOlam and the Gedol Yisrael say with tears running down their eyes, the brocha of Shechiyonu v'kiyamonu. It's one of the most emotively charged brochas that we have, if one says it properly. Uchvar hayiso mezuman lamus. by thanking God for keeping you alive, you must be acknowledging that you don't deserve to be alive, and that it's only through the Ribbono Shel Olam's kind offices that you're alive. So before saying the bracha of Shehecheyanu, you picture yourself having died already, your life over. Why? What have you really done? Have you done enough to really merit a life this long? Have you used your life so well and so valuable that you really have a right to it? So you've got to say to yourself, whatever good you might have done, it doesn't equate to the kindness of the Ribbono Shel Olam in one moment of life, that which He gives to us. Certainly in all the kindness that I've received from the Ribbono Shel Olam, my credit is already run out, which means I have no right to life. That means that by all rights, I should already have passed on. That's what I've got to picture in my mind before I say the bracha. And then you'd say thank you to the Ribbono Shel Olam that despite all that, I'm still alive. And then you see benefit in that. Then you see profit. You say, if by rights I should be dead, then the fact that I'm alive is already revach. That's already profit without anything else, no matter what my life is like. No matter what my circumstances are, the fact that I'm alive is already profit. And then you will find illness and death, chas v'sholem, easier to handle when it comes. Because you've been preparing yourself for it already. At least every Yom Tov, at least every time you buy new clothing, you have new fruit. Each time you go through that, you're emotionally preparing yourself to accept that which is inevitable later on. Because you've already gone through the calculation and you've come to the conclusion that you've already profited from the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're already living on overtime. You're already living on a concession. So when the time comes up, you don't feel bitter and you don't feel disappointed. You're thankful for everything that you've had. You've already accepted that in truth you should have been deprived of any goodness, because by nature you're dust. What are you? And the Ribbono Shel Olam has given you life, whatever period of time it is, He's given it to you with all the potential, with all the possibilities, with all the pleasures, with all the benefits. That's all come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And you thank Him for that. And at the time that the Ribbono Shel Olam removes those benefits from you, you thank the Ribbono Shel Olam and you serve Him, and you say, Hashem Nosan, Vashem Lokach, Yishem Hashem Levirach. I thank you for the time that I had it, and I thank you for taking it back when the time comes to take it back. It's like a person who goes to hire a car. And he hires the car and he uses it and it's wonderful. And then he's got to get the car back to them and he can't quite get it to them. And he phones them and he says, can you keep it for another couple of hours? They say, all right, keep it for another couple of hours. Why don't we get upset about it? Because we understand it's not mine. It was rented to me. I've had it for more than I deserve to have it. Thank you for renting it to me. Thank you for giving me the extra time. And thank you for being there to take it back when it's time to take it back also. That's the way we should view life and death. It should be as simple and as rational as that. We've rented a body from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're already on overtime. He should have taken it back already. Our lease is over a long time already. And he's leaving it. He's leaving it with us still. That doesn't mind. He's not calling it back yet. Comes the time he calls it back. Fine. We'll accept it. The time's up. Sure. But only after they're dead. You don't go to other people and say, you should have given your car back already. and you're lucky that the Ribbono Shel Olam is keeping you alive and I don't know what you've done to deserve it. That kind of thing we don't tend to say. And then the importance of that is not just that you're able to handle death. Then you can enjoy life. Then the whole of life becomes enjoyable no matter what the circumstances are. One has the capacity for enjoyment of any situation in life. The lack of hano in our modern lifestyle is one of the biggest tragedies of the human being. Just the ability to use these techniques to enjoy, to be grateful for what we've got. We become so wrapped up in in things. So very often you'll see a person will say, if you pin him down, he'll say, no, Baruch Hashem, I'm very happy. The Ribbono Shel Olam has been good to me, I've got nothing to complain about. But he doesn't really mean I'm very happy. What he means is, when I stop to think about it, I'm happy. But most of the time he's not happy. Most of the time he's running around like a chicken without a head. Just occasionally he stops and he looks at himself and he says, have I got anything to be unhappy about? He says, no, good, so I'm happy. Right, weiter. Then he carries on with his unhappiness. It's to actually be in a state where one's enjoying oneself, where one's happy, when one feels good. That is something which is so rare because of all the nonsense. Well, just because of absolute nonsense. Yeah, they're sick. You know, they're sick. There's nothing I can do about them. This, by the way, fits in very nicely with a piece of Eiv which I did with the ladies yesterday, where Eliphaz shows Eiv that it isn't possible to be happy without a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Happiness and religion go hand in hand. It's not possible. A person who isn't religious, a person who doesn't have emunah and bitochin and hasn't got a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, doesn't have the techniques of happiness. And that's the principle here of the Kuzari. And that's why the world is so involved in the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is not something you can pursue. Happiness is the byproduct of religion. You can't pursue happiness. If you're a religious person, the byproduct is happiness. But if you're not a religious person, you spend your life pursuing happiness and you never find it. And one who doesn't hold by this way, don't think that he is capable of human pleasure. He doesn't even understand animal pleasure. He says, don't think that if the choice is animal pleasure, we've all got. But if you're a special human being, you can enjoy a more sophisticated type of pleasure. The Kuzari is mechadish that if you don't live this way, even animal pleasure eludes you. There's no pleasure. Kashir Amanu B'Shikr is the example we gave with the Shikr, that even the animal pleasures, if he doesn't have his human faculty, if he can't stop to think, then even his animal pleasures he can't enjoy. Note that one of the most important principles here is the ability to pause at various stages. And perhaps that's where we slip up so badly, and that's what the Brocha does. They've done a lot of work on this in modern psychology as well. The need to pause. I think I told you that I was in Switzerland once, and I was introduced to a fellow just come back from his first skiing lesson. He was the manager of SAA in Zurich, and he just came back from his first skiing lesson, and he really looked a mess. And I said, how was it? And he says, it's all right. He says, but they don't teach you right. I said, what do you mean they don't teach you right? He says, today they taught us how to ski. It was our first day. He says, the first thing they should teach us is how to stop. When they've taught us how to stop, then they can teach us how to ski. But to teach a person how to ski before you've taught him how to stop, that's dangerous. And we went into a whole Musa discussion that was the whole of life, really. The important thing is to know how to stop. Now, this whole pleasure thing is the ability to stop before the pleasure. That's the concept of hachono, of preparing yourself. And the quality of life, but now I'm not talking about life as a long thing that starts at age naught and goes through to age 120. I'm talking about little scenes out of life. Just the little scene. The quality of each scene is dependent on the preparation that goes into that scene. Just as the quality of anything we do depends on the preparation. A lawyer who goes to court depends on how well prepared he is. A businessman who makes a presentation depends on how well prepared he is. To what extent he's anticipated all the possible objections that could be raised by his client, and he's gone through each one of them, and he's prepared his answer. And if he says this, he'll do this. And if he says this, everything has been prepared. The better prepared he is, the more professional he goes. The ballet dancer on the stage, the actor on the stage, any human situation, the quality of the performance depends on the extent of the preparation. That's all it is. And that's perhaps why there is so much more enjoyment, if one looks at a work, if one goes to a work of art in its literary form rather than its visual form, if you read a great work of art, then each perek, each chapter stands on its own, and you've got a chance to prepare yourself, to read the chapter, to summarize the chapter in your mind, to get ready for the next one. It's sort of scene by scene, one at a time. In a visual form, in the movie situation, you're just taken through it with no breaks in between. Remember at the beginning of Vayikra we had why there are hefsekus on the parsha. Somebody mentioned it in the Devar Torah recently, that Moshe had to, the Bnei Yisrael understood as he was teaching the Torah, he had to stop every little while to let Moshe integrate it. We can't integrate something continuous. There is a need to stop, to pause, to absorb what has been and to prepare what is about to be, and then to carry on. And really a movie is a whole lot of frames, of time frames. I don't know if it works like that in Dr. Schneller in television. Is it also like that? Is it also separate frames? Is it also frame by frame? It's really a whole lot of separate frames. It just goes so quickly that it looks as if it's all, but it isn't really. Life isn't like that. Life is actually frame by frame. And what the Kuzari is talking about is stopping before each frame, preparing yourself for it, imagining what it would be without it, going ahead with it, and so on with each one of them.
The TV is that because of the
that's even more so. It's not, no, but each
life,
frame.
No, but life is continuous unless you make it that.
That's true. You've got that.
Life is continuous. There's continuity to life, but there isn't in the TV.
Well, there really isn't. Really, you're wrong, because every moment of life is an eternity. And if you look at every moment as an eternity, then each eternity is a life on its own. And that's why we value human life so much. And that's why we say even a second of life, even a moment of life, is an eternity. What do we mean by that? That each is a little frame on its own. Each is a complete episode on its own. Each little thing that one does, each maisa, each mitzvah, each human encounter, you can just encapsulate that on its own, and it's a complete work of art, which is an eternity and has eternal value all on its own. And then you're on to the next one. It's artificially we make it appear. So I'm telling you it's the same in life. It's just because it happens so fast that it's like a movie. It looks as if it's all continuous, but it's not. It's each one is a frame of eternity. And in each thing we do, there's infinite value and there's eternal value in each little momentary episode. And that's why with the television, if you stop it, you know, now you can get these things in the videos that you can stop it and just see the frame. Each one, sometimes when you do that, each one is a work of art. Each one is beautiful. You take a picture of your children running around and then play it and pause, stop. And you see a child in the middle of throwing a ball. And that. Each one is a photograph that is just too beautiful that you can't get on normal photography. Each one, you stop it frame by frame, and each one is more beautiful than the next. And you miss that beauty by rushing it all together. You stop it and see the dramatic impact of the still. And you realize that in that moment of life, the expression on the face, the energy in the body, and you realize that you missed that when you were just following it all through. It all, one thing flows into the other, and you miss the little beauties of every moment. And that's why we don't enjoy life. It's all one thing flowing into another, and we don't see each time frame as something which is so full and so overflowing with pleasure and with simcha and with brocha. We don't notice it because we're busy on the next one. As one's happening, we're busy with the next one. We don't pause. The art of life is pausing. Hachonah, preparation. Regarding each episode as worthy of preparation. Then one can have proper enjoyment. And that's what a chosid applies to his mind in the case of every brocha. And he understands the kavono and what is involved in the kavono, what's around the kavono. Take for example in the davening, the brocha of Yetzer HaMoiris, not only Birkas HaNeni, Birkas HaShvach as well. What do you picture in your mind? You've got to use your imagination when you say a brocha. There's got to be a picture in your mind when you say a brocha. And this is very beautiful. When we talk about kavona, this is what we mean, to use your koach hadimyon. You're saying a brocha, you should be able to stop yourself at that moment. Again, get the still of the picture and see, what are you thinking? What is the picture in your mind at that moment? Seder olam ha'elyon. You should see the seder of the upper worlds. V'godel ho'ishim ohem. the enormity of the participants in that Seder, v'goydel to'aloisom, and the greatness of their purpose, v'shehem etzel boiron kekoton shebiramosim, and yet to realize that these wonders of the universe, the galaxies and the solar systems and all that goes with them, these wonders of the universe, are no more wonderful by the Ribbono Shel Olam than little creatures, little creepy crawly creatures. Ve'im hem gedolim ba'atzmam legodel to'aloseinu bohem. And the only reason that they appear so great is because we get such great benefit from them. V'harayo shehim etzel boirom kasher amati. And the proof that by the Ribbono Shel Olam they are, as I said, Shechokhmosoi v'hanhagosoi b'yetziras hanamolo v'hadavoiro, that the wisdom and the evidence of the Ribbono Shel Olam's hanhogo in the... Who needs a doctor there? Is it yours? Is in the hanhogo and the yetzira of the little ant or the bee. Einenu mekatzeres b'chokhmosoi v'hanhagosoi l'shemesh v'galgalo, is no less than the wisdom and the hanhogo of the sun and the solar system. Is there more wisdom in the universe than there is in the ant or in the bee? Ach simone ha-chochma v'hashkocho yose dako v'nifles banamolo v'dvoyro. Adarabba, says the Kuzri, the signs of the Ribbono Shel Olam's wisdom and his control over the world is more fine and more wondrous in the ant and in the bee. Im katnusom, because of their miniature state. All this he should think while he's saying the bracha of Yetzer HaMa'iris, so that the Ma'iris, the constellations and solar systems and so on, should not be so great in his eyes, that he should be affected by the sotan and the views of some of the spiritually minded people, to start thinking that they have influence over the world. He needs to know that they are no greater than the ant and the bee. And just as the ant and the bee doesn't control the world, so the galaxies don't control the world. All they are is their energy, their forces of energy, gas and fire. That's Eov, who finally acknowledges that he has been wrong in seeing the constellations of the heaven as having forces over mankind. And so as he progresses through the davening to Avas Olam, he should have in his mind, the attachment of the light, of the energy of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to those who are fit to accept it, like the reflection of the light of the sun in a very clean mirror. And the Torah comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam as a means of establishing an expression of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Malchus down on this earth, parallel to the expression of his Malchus in the upper worlds. And the Ribbono Shel Olam did not decree that angels should be created in the world. But he wanted man, mizer of Adam, from seed and blood, misgabrim bohem ativim, a man who has the turmoil of his natures, of his different forces of nature pulling him to pieces, misnatzchim bohem amidus, and that his human character should be able to overcome these powers within him. Uchafiz chalfus ha'atzlocha v'roya ha'mazel, and according to the different degrees of atzlocha and mazel and all sorts of things which occur to people, Kashi and his Boba Sefer Yitzir, as is explained in the Sefer Yitzir. V'chashe yizach mehem yochid o'kohol, and when an individual or a community purifies itself from these natural forces that tear at a human being, yochul olov ha'ur ha'eliki, then the energy of the Ribbono Shel Olam falls upon him, v'yan higenu b'nifloyis uv'neiroyis yoitzis miseder ha'ilum ativi, and the Ribbono Shel Olam then conducts him or them with wonders and miracles that go right out of the normal rules of nature, and this is called, as coming from the Ribbono Shel Olam, Avo and Simcha. And the Ribbono Shel Olam finds after the astronomical systems of the universe, the only other being he finds that is so meticulous in the carrying out of his will is Elo Chasidei Bnei Odom, that's the human Chasidim. And that's why you'll find in the Rambam difficult things that we're one step below the Galgolim. And the Galgolim are perfect in their programming, that they don't deviate one little bit from the Ribbono Shel Olam's pre-programming. As complex as it is, and the fact that each one has its own forces and its own gravitational pulls, and they're all one thing spinning around another thing. There was an article recently in the paper about how near a miss the world had recently. Did you see that? 500 million miles or something.
Past the distance from the moon.
Yeah, but that's very near. In terms of the universe, that's a very worrying. But that's how it is. It all goes, the Ribbono Shel Olam, it goes kaseder, and everything's handled right with perfect precision. So the most precise carrying out of Hashem's will is in the astronomical systems. Between the generation of Adam and Yaakov, it was only individuals. And after the establishment of Yaakov and his children, then a community was established. That was the first time that a community was established. And then the love of Hashem fell upon them to be a community which was loved by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Sidron Bamidbar Keseder HaGalgolim, and he set them up in the desert in the same kind of system as the Solus, as the constellational systems, arbod golim ka'arba rive hagalgal, four flags like the four different sectors of the circular constellationary whatever you call it, v'shnei masar shevet k'shnei masar mazolus, and 12 tribes like the 12 constellations, u'machane ha'levim b'teich ha'machanos, and the machane of the levim in the middle, kasher omer b'sefer yitzira. And in the middle is the Mishkan, the Beis Hamikdash stands in the middle, and it bears them all. This all is an expression of love of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The fulfillment of Hashem's Seder, the way the constellations are formed, they were put there by the Ribbono Shel Olam in that particular form, because that was the perfect balance. And when Bnei Yisrael encamped around the Mishkan, that was a physical manifestation of the perfect balance. And you had an example here of Am Yisrael fulfilling the Ribbono Shel Olam's plan of perfect balance. And that leads you into Kriya Shema. So all this comes in the first brachas of Yetzer HaMa'iris. The perfect balance of the astronomical systems, as expressed by God's will in the perfect balance of Bnei Yisrael, as they in fact camped in the Midbar after they came out of Mitzrayim, which led them into a position of being able to accept the Torah, which we relive when we say Kriya Shema. Ba'acharkin b'mashikolil emes v'yotziv, and then you say emes v'yotziv ma'anyonim ha'nechutzim le'kabolas ha'Torah, where we go through the various things which are needed for Kabolas ha'Torah. Ki'ilu acharshin izbayel l'kal asher kodom ve'evin oseh ve'ikire, as if after having accepted and understood everything which has come before, Osar al nafsho yisur, he takes an oath upon himself, v'heyid edim, and he declares witnesses for him, shekiblu kasher kibluhu ha'ovis, that he has accepted the Torah as the forefathers accepted the Torah, l'fonov, before him, v'chein yekablu ha'bonim adul me'ad, and that our children will accept it the same way. It's a declaration of commitment to the Ribbono Shel Olam every morning after Kriya Shema. But that comes after the Yetzer HaMa'iris, and it comes after Shema. Then one comes to the declaration of absolute commitment. Kamo Shehu Omer, as we say in that part of the davening, Alav Yiseinu Ve'Yoleinu Ve'Al Boneinu, on our fathers and on us and on our children, Ve'Al Doriseinu and our future generations, Dover Toiv V'Kayim Chok V'Lo Yaver, something good and alive, something that is a statute and will never change. It's a declaration every single day that we make. And then we tie together the ties which tie us as a nation. We declare our belief in Hashem's godliness and in His being the origin of everything. And His Hashgocha Prot is the fact that He has cared for our fathers. And that the Torah is from Shemayim. And on signs on all this. That was Yetzias Mitzrayim, which gave evidence to that whole concept. Kamoshi Omar, as we say, Emes Shatuhu Hashem Elokeinu, Emes Me'olam Ushmecho, Ve'ezra Saviseinu, Ve'emes Mimitzrayim Gatonu Hashem Elokeinu. That's the meaning of that whole section of the davening. Mi Sheheshlim Kol Eile BeKavono Gemuro, and anybody who goes through this whole Seder with proper Kavono, Hu Yisroel Amisi. He's a true Yid. Then he's a Jewish person. And then he is entitled to expect to be a part of the divine plan associated with Bnei Yisrael, not connected with the other nations of the earth. And then it is easy for him to stand before the Shekhinah, and he can make his requests on the Shmona Esra, which is about to come, and he will be answered. Now he's a part of Klal Yisrael, he's a part of Hashem's divine plan, he can stand before Hashem as a member of the Jewish people. This is an amazing chiddush that we have to renew our identity with the Jewish people every morning. And that we do between Baruch Hu and Shmona Esra. We reaffirm the values which make us Jews. Imagine if the law of return in Israel was based on this. Anybody may be an Israeli citizen who davens every morning from Baruch Hu to Shmona Esra with Kavona Shlema. Then you can be an Israeli citizen. That's all. Imagine then, they wouldn't accuse us of being racists. It's a thing, it's open to anybody. You wouldn't have what?
You wouldn't have enough people to sit in the Knesset. Who might vote for?
You wouldn't need a Knesset. Let's stop there, then he goes on to Shmona Esra in the next piece.